arrange for a meeting like this was all that was possible. I wanted to read a little something, speak about the conception of spiritual master and disciple, and then I would hope that you could ask specific questions that were on your mind. This is a section in the 8th canto. It's a relationship between a husband and wife, Kashyapa Muni, and his wife, Diti. So the husband is also a guru person for the wife. Certainly Kashyapa Muni is a guru. She approached him, and actually in her case she had a kind of material desire. She wanted her sons, her chief son is Indra, she wanted her sons to get back the heavenly kingdom which they had lost at that time. And she knew her husband was very powerful. So she asked him personally to help her. And this is his reply. My dear, I said Diti, it's Aditi. My dear Aditi, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master of everything, who can subdue everyone's enemies, and who sits within everyone's heart. Only that Supreme Person, Krishna or Vasudev, can bestow all auspicious benedictions upon everyone. For he is the spiritual master of the universe. Vasudevam Jagat Gurum. When I come out of the door, more people may be coming in. And in the purport, Prabhupada writes, whenever one is perplexed, whenever one is perplexed, let him take shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna, who will give the devotee intelligence to help him surpass all difficulties and return home back to Godhead. Kashyapa Muni advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudeva Krishna so that all her problems would be easily solved. Thus Kashyapa Muni was an ideal spiritual master. He was not so foolish that he would present himself as an exalted personality as good as God. He was actually a bona fide guru because he advised his wife to seek shelter at the lotus feet of Vasudev. One who trains his subordinate or disciple to worship Vasudev is the truly bona fide spiritual master. The word Jagat Gurum is very important in this regard. Kashyapa Muni did not falsely declare himself to be Jagat Guru, although he was actually Jagat Guru because he advocated the cause of Vasudev. He said that in a sense he couldn't help her, he was not so powerful, but he gave some instruction how she could take shelter of Krishna, who is the Jagat Guru, or the original guru, or sometimes say the real guru, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are some other examples of this. Somebody trusting and expecting somebody to help them, and that person expressing their inability but recommending they take shelter of God. In the Bhagavatam, for example, Dhruva Maharaj, he was crying and asked his mother to help him, and she said, "I'm a helpless person. I cannot help you, but I've heard that the sages, they go to the forest and they find God. He can give you all benediction." So later in life, of course, Dhruva later became pure devotee. He recognized his mother as a type of guru. That's called the guru who shows you to the path. And also There was an instance where even a prostitute, Chintamani, was the prostitute who guided Guhamangala Thakur. So just see, he wasn't even going to her for, like in this case, thinking, yes, you are all-knowing person, you please. But he was going to her for sense gratification. But she just turned it around and said, if you had devotion for Krishna like you have for me, then your life would have some value. You should take shelter of Krishna. And somehow it was timely advice. And he recommends, or he dedicates a work to her. He became very exalted, confidential devotee of Krishna in Vrindavan. And he dedicates one of these very confidential rasa books to Chintamani, because she showed him to the path. But it's not, this is not just a, it can't be just a casual thing of admitting that you don't know anything and saying, well, I've heard that God can help you. If we're going to have an ongoing relationship of spiritual master and disciple, these spiritual masters expected to give many relevant instructions and provide a kind of inspiration, because why don't you sit in the chair back there? That's what we thought would be good. It would be easier for you. Because God is not so accessible, so available to a conditioned soul. So so the spiritual master or the Vaishnava helps to give regular access to Krishna when one has faith in that tangible connection of the spiritual master to Krishna. But still, the principle is always this principle, that the person who is performing the service of spiritual master must always think that he is, as it says here, he was not so foolish that he would present himself as an exalted personality as good as God. So he should always think like that. And simply tell the disciple to develop his or her relationship with Krishna. It's the relationship with Krishna that will bring us back to Godhead. We each have an eternal relationship with Krishna. And I remember Srila Prabhupada saying something to the effect once that it's not the gift of the guru that he gives you your relationship with Krishna. That's, you have that eternally. But his gift is to awaken it and to accept your service and to recommend Krishna to you. But you have your eternal relationship with Krishna, and so his success, the guru's success, is when the disciples develop like that. You could almost say it's a kind of competition going on between the disciple and the spiritual master, or at least we can say they have different points of view. There's a nice verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where there's a lot of information about guru in the Adi Lila chapter 1. And one verse says something like, my spiritual master is the eternal servant of Krishna, but and sees himself like that, like another, just another jiva, and sees himself very humbly, in fact. But I see him as the representative of Krishna. So so it's like that. If a guru thinks of himself as a guru, he becomes disqualified as a guru. You've heard the Sanskrit play on the words. If guru, it means guru, spiritual master. If you say guru, that means cow. So if a guru, a person who has disciples, and he thinks, I am a guru and I have disciples, if he actually thinks like that, that's a designation, and he's actually a cow. He's not a guru, he's a cow. So you see it's rather a precarious situation. That is also a designation. Lord Chaitanya says, Nadanam Najanam Sundarim Kavitam Bhajagadishagamya. I don't want beautiful women, wives. I don't want money. I don't want followers. If you do want followers, then you're just like somebody who wants money and who wants to enjoy women. And sometimes those are exactly what they do, enjoy, in the name of the Guru. So, but sometimes this service has to be taken on behalf of one's own spiritual master. And Lord Chaitanya, he in fact asked everyone to become guru. Yare deke tari kaha Krishna upadesh amaragya guru tara idesh. Everyone become guru on my order. So the previous spiritual master or one's spiritual master will protect you from becoming a puffed up fool pretending to be a guru, and will protect you from that if you follow his instructions, and then you will serve him by doing this duty of training up disciples. So this is a little bit description of the guru, the required mentality of the person who does this service. We heard a little bit on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's day. Jagadish Maharaj was reading. How Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so humble. Said that when, if you're in the class, you remember, said that when his disciples would bow down to him, he would bow down in return. And he's made some wonderful statements about that, about his own feeling of disqualification. But also said that he would do this duty, as arrogant as it seemed to do, because it was the order of Lord Chaitanya and the spiritual master, and he would train disciples, including training them even in the etiquette of worshipping the guru. So from the disciples' point of view, he has to find a person who he can respect as representative of Krishna. And these are some of the things that one should look for, that the guru is always representing Krishna, and in our case, in Krishna Conscious Movement, Srila Prabhupada, we are so far from Krishna by birth and training in this Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada is the guru from whom Krishna is emanating to us in the form of his books and instructions and everything. So the guru should be just helping other devotees as a kind of service to develop Krishna consciousness in their relationship with Prabhupada's books and chanting and serving. And somehow or other, these relationships develop where with faith and with service attitude, mutual service attitude, there is a guru-disciple relationship. And that disciple sees the guru as representative of Krishna or representative of Srila Prabhupada. So Kasyapa then says to his wife, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very merciful to the poor, will fulfill all your desires. For devotional service unto him is infallible. Any method other than devotional service is useless. That is my opinion." So, that's a little introduction. Is there any of that you don't understand, or some of you have some questions? Yes.
Were you just saying that Prabhupada is the actual guru, and everyone else is to establish that relationship with him? What other people, what other gurus are there to try and develop that relationship? Did you say that?
Yeah. Everyone will say that. I don't think that's a... Everyone in his calm will say that. Not only I said it.
Should the disciple be afraid of asking any question to the guru if it's a genuine question on this?
Yes.
You
should be afraid. But there are different kinds of being afraid. In other words, some questions, they may be very good questions, but if he has some fear, you say your spiritual life is in fear and trembling, you should be sometimes afraid. Not you're afraid that this person is a bad person, but at least I was afraid of Srila Prabhupada, and I think it was partly a good thing. But in another, we're afraid that will be that it's a foolish question. See, that would be something better to be afraid. If you're thinking, I have a question, it's important to me, but it may be seen as foolish, and then this person or this guru, he will point out that I was foolish. So in fear of that, I'm not going to ask this question. So you can be afraid, but you should go ahead and be seen as a fool, and then it's good for you. But there are some questions that maybe are better not asked, and there are questions that are better not asked, like material things. Asking the guru for material things. So maybe you meant that also, not just to be afraid of asking a question, but are there some questions that are better not asked? Yes. Anything material you can ask somebody else. But even that, might as well ask it, and then you start to understand, at least by trial and error, what kind of questions I should ask and what is the nature of this relationship. I remember asking Prabhupada many foolish questions, and some of them he wouldn't answer or did answer, and I began to understand better what the nature of the relationship is, that you shouldn't ask silly questions or talk about material things. But you have to find out by trying. And the questions, in the Bhagavad Gita purport, it says, absurd inquiries. It refers to, should be avoided. And what's particularly referred to there, of course, is questions just speculating and challenging, and also with not accompanied by any service attitude. Tadvidhi Panipatena Paripashnina Sevaya. The question should be accompanied with service. Prabhupada said he had basically only one question to ask his spiritual master: how may I serve you? Other than that, he just listened and sometimes understood and sometimes didn't understand. But the service questions are very important. And then questions about doubts. How is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What is the nature of spiritual life? So many. That's the person we're supposed to ask about. And it should be from the... It should be with feeling to really understand the truth and with trust in the replies. The more open we can be, the better. But the more elevated the questions, the more spiritual, the better. Sincere questions to help you advance in spiritual life. That's the idea. Of course, if they happen to be universally applicable, then it's a very wonderful question, like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the kind of questions Maharaj Parikshit asks. But those are two criteria for excellent questions, is that it's very relevant to you, it's an important question for you personally, and it's good for the people of the world. Like the perfect example is Maharaj Parikshit says, what is the duty of a person in human life, especially one who is about to die? He was asking for himself. He was about to die. And he was saying, my dear spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, I'm about to die. What should I do? But it was also good for all the people of the world, that question, because we're all about to die. So we may not be able to frame such wonderful questions until we're wonderful devotees. But at least it should be relevant to ourselves, and it should be towards spiritual progress, our spiritual progress. Someone else?
Someone else has to leave. Is there an American?
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Prabhupada said that he listened, basically listened, even if he didn't understand, he listened. But if we have to understand in order to make spiritual progress, then I don't think it's a bit risky if we don't sort of ask questions.
That was especially the first times that he met his spiritual master. He said he couldn't understand always because he was speaking, he said, on such a high platform. I was also implying that questions get answered just by hearing. I remember I would have questions on my mind. I remember, and then Srila Prabhupada would just walk into the room, and I would feel that the questions were answered. A very particular question. It just, especially if it was doubtful or there was something about it. You know. How should I do such and such to progress in spiritual life? And just by seeing him, I understood what the answer was. Because seeing a pure devotee, you understand, what a nonsense question that was. I know myself what I should do. I should surrender to Krishna. And you would be inspired by the answer just by seeing him. But not that it always works like that. So, then when he speaks, more questions are answered. And then when he finishes speaking, then, as you're saying, there may be many things you didn't understand still. So don't be artificial. That's some important concern is not mentioned, hoping that it will be mentioned, hoping that it will be answered by some unspoken process. But things do happen at an unspoken level too. And some things we just can't understand at present, so we have to wait. Even speaking of questions, you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, every year there was some residents of, I think it was the residents of Phulagram, they used to ask the same question. They would come to see Lord Chaitanya, go enjoy the Ratha Yatra, and then they would leave and they would say, what is a Vaishnava? They would ask him. And different years he gave different answers. What is a Vaishnava? Questions can be asked. Certainly.
Speaking for myself, I have doubts as to which aspect or which type of devotional service to do. But I've just been realizing that the more important question to ask is how to be Krishna conscious in whatever service I'm doing.
Yes.
Although sometimes that doubt is there, should I do this, should I do that?
Yeah. Those things start at some point in our spiritual career, some of those questions start getting answered, but they, like, you have to decide on your ashram. Then that question, should I be a brahmachari, should I be a grihastha? So at some point that gets settled. And then you go on to other questions. All right, so I'm a grihastha. And then what kind of service should I do? Then you settle that. Where should I live in the world? How should I do this? And where should I send my children to school? Some things start getting settled. But we see that even advanced devotees, they still are asking questions like that. I'm asking myself, and I know I was, and I was in India recently, I was talking to different Garbhas, and one comes to mind was Lokanath Maharaj, and he said, he even wrote about it, I noticed, in his Vyas Puja offering to Prabhupada. He's thinking he would like to fully concentrate on Padayatra, but some of his Garbhas say, well, don't only do Padayatra, you should also do this kind of thing. And he said, well, actually what they say, that's true too, but which would be the more responsible thing? What should I do? So that kind of thing may continue. What is the best service to do? But I like what you said. Even more important is being Krishna conscious in whatever service you do. Because Krishna doesn't count the particular service as much as the attitude in which you do it. Whether it's a big service or a little service, he counts the bhakti. So for that, there are the services of chanting and hearing that develop the general Krishna consciousness no matter what you're doing. To always be able to call on Krishna in the holy name, to regularly hear Krishna's message so that you know who you're serving. This is even more essential than whether I am a pujari or a book distributor. But because we are people with certain, you know, human needs and so on, these things are also very important to us, and we can't be peaceful until we have a kind of service that that we feel good about. I know for myself, in trying to guide other devotees as a service, I tend to concentrate more on helping them with that essence of trying to be a devotee and chanting and hearing, having a devotional attitude, rather than helping devotees pick out their service. Because often it involves things that they have to decide on for themselves, or if they're living in a temple, it involves not just something that I should tell them, but their relationship with different authorities in the temple. And I try to help them in that area, but the instructions would seem to me more abiding and unchanging, and that I try to help with are the ones that are true for any service. That's to be a devotee.
I was just about to ask a question about a devotee who is directed by a spiritual master at every step, or is he given some sort of freedom to choose his own service? Kind of answer that question.
Could you open the window though? It is not too cold.
Right. The
tendency is that, although it may be different with individuals, the tendency is that in the beginning especially, there'll be more looking at everything that the disciple is doing. Just like a mother has to watch a child at every moment. Say, now you do this, now you do this, now you do this. This is how you put on your tilak. There's even a letter Prabhupada writes that there's no freedom for the disciple in the beginning. So completely dependent on the spiritual master. And then, as with a child that grows up, then there's more independence. But then, if you give independence to a little child, they'll do all nonsense. But if you give what we may call independence, is kind of like a dirty word. the way we usually use it, independence implies almost disobedience or something, or speculation. But it has a good sense too, freedom. So if you give freedom to a mature disciple, then that person will do all kinds of good service. It doesn't have to be told every step what to do. So that's the general change from immature to mature. More freedom is given. And in return, the disciple gives a lot more life to just follow the will of the guru. Like in a sense, we could say that Srila Prabhupada, he served his guru like with very minimum detailed instructions. Make yourself a preacher, preach in the West. And like he did, Prabhupada did everything to carry that out, but not at every step going back to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in any external way at least, and saying, you have asked us to chant 64 rounds every day, but I don't think these Westerners can do it. What shall I do? Or, it appears in the West that women have equal rights compared to India, and they also want to join this movement. Should I make some innovation? But rather, these things he had to decide on his own to carry out the will of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that Krishna consciousness should be spread all over the world. So you really have to have creative intelligence and freedom to really serve the guru wholeheartedly. And you have to take chances sometimes. And that disciple will really, if he does it right, he will not. He'll be even better than the disciple who would only do what he's told to do. That Lord Rama praised Hanuman in that way, that there are three kinds of disciples. The best disciple is the one who does not only what he's asked, but does a lot more. And he embraced Hanuman because Hanuman was asked, find out where Sita is, which is itself a difficult instruction. Hanuman not only found where Sita was, he went there, he spoke to her, he gave her assurances, and then he destroyed most of the city of Lanka by himself. He didn't have any instructions to do those things. He came back and Ram embraced him. But you're the best kind of disciple. Not as good as you is a disciple who does what he's told, but that's all. Waits for more orders. And then least is the rascal, so-called disciple, who doesn't even do the instructions. So that would come into the category of freedom. We surrender our freedom toward the spiritual master's mission, Krishna's mission. But surrender doesn't mean reject it. We give our whole self in different ways. We shouldn't think of spiritual life or following the spiritual master as just a bunch of rules, and that we want to do there are right, there are do's and there are do-nots. So you have to do the right things and avoid doing the bad things. And especially, you try to, the mediocre disciple tries to find out, what can I do that it's within the rules? You know, it's like a sense gratification. Sometimes questions are asked like that. The behind the question is, I'm interested in sense gratification. Is it allowable by the rules? As if that's what spiritual life is about, finding a way to lead a religious life and with sense gratification, so that we don't get punished in the next life. But spiritual life is much more beyond that. The question should be, how can I become perfect? Not what are the rules? What can you do? What's allowed? Can you eat this? Can we do this? Can we go see this? Is it all right to go see this kind of movie? Can we eat this kind of food? No, the question is, how can I be a pure devotee? And although the guru may tell us many, or any Vaishnava may tell us many different instructions, this is back to your original question, does the guru tell us many, many things, or not so many, many? He may tell us many, many, but then to make full surrender, we have to start taking the guru's order within and start surrendering the things that he can't see. He's not like a mind reader. We know what he wants, so we have to start looking within and saying, all right, you know what your spiritual master wants, then do it. Do this and do that and act according. Then we're at a nice stage where Krishna and Guru are like always before us, we're always in their presence, and we just act to please them. When you're not so advanced, then you want to run back to them and ask them, what should I do? The Prabhupada encouraged us to try to get intelligence from Krishna how to carry out the order of the spiritual master. But until such time, don't be afraid to ask, how do you put on your tilak? What should we eat? But don't ask it a dozen times. Even sometimes in the Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit asks something and Sukadeva seems to get a little disturbed and says, I already answered that question. Remember that was asked when he says, Maharaj Parikshit says, how is it that the gopis, if they were attracted to Krishna, just like he was their lover, then how could they get liberation? And Shukadeva said, an intelligent disciple doesn't ask a question that was already answered. And he refers to the previous time where he explained that point. So even Maharaj Parikshit may sometimes get chastised. Well, I asked somebody new.
Lauren, what should one do when it's like you have decided you should be reincarnation with anything? But there are so many gurus to choose from. It's like every good thing you see, anything was very nice and very wonderful.
Yeah. Well, in one sense, you can take them all as gurus. That's there, too. Not that by taking one, then all the rest are finished. But we can have many Shiksha gurus. But to pick out one for initiation or re-initiation, that's like a detail, because they're all supposed to be the same. They're all giving the Prabhupada Shiksha. So there'll be some particular reasons why one person will accept a guru that are different than from another person. It could be something as simple as that the person is accessible in my part of the world where I can see the person and get instructions and guidance. Or it could be something based on your particular nature, that person has a kind of nature that you think will you'll be able to surrender to and have a personal relationship with, even though they may not be in the same part of the world. This person inspires me to chant and to serve. But no one can do it for you. You have to go through the ordeal, if that's what it is, of trying to come to a decision like that. One should take one's time, and you can develop tentative relationships with people who you're considering, and there's nothing dishonorable about that. Take instruction from them and associate with them. The Vedas say you should observe a spiritual master for a year. So at least that should be done. As you say, there are many gurus, not especially Bhaktivedanta Manor, Shivaram Maharaj said, it's non-stop sannyasis here. So it's not just you see somebody one day and you say, oh, that's, I will get initiated by him or I'll get initiated. The Vedas say it could take a year, it should take a year. And the guru, he's not going to say, yes, I'll initiate you tomorrow. But he's supposed to take a year too. So you can have nothing unfaithful about having a tentative attitude. Anybody else?
If a spiritual master is favorably inclined, then one naturally receives the mercy of the Lord Supreme Lord. And when one receives that mercy, then one is able to conquer all sorts of influences of sattva, rajasa, etc. So how can, for some of us, we have lost our spiritual, direct spiritual master. So, since he no longer exists, how can one serve, or how can one be guided in that way?
You first said that in the seventh canto, Prabhupada said that if the spiritual master is pleased, then you make advancement to overcome the modes.
If he's
favorably inclined to you, or pleased with you.
What does it just say that if the spiritual master is favorably inclined?
Towards a disciple.
It doesn't. If Prabhupada just says that.
Well, I don't have the text before me, but what does it mean? Favorably inclined towards what? It must mean towards a disciple.
I should imagine so, huh?
Or towards somebody. So the real question, though, is if you lose your spiritual master, that's your question. Where do you get guidance?
Well, yes,
how do you please Krishna?
Come above all this, conquer the influence of the spiritual master.
Well, you have to, by taking shelter of the spiritual master. So this has been gone over, of course, again and again. All persons in that unfortunate situation were advised to take shelter at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, and when he's favorably inclined, meaning when you are sincerely serving him and serving his movement and his followers and becoming Krishna conscious, then you get Krishna's blessings and you overcome the modes. And part of that may also be that you seek shelter in some of his followers. So that's how you recover from the loss of having a guide who is no longer able to guide. You just have to take shelter again. Isn't that? That's, don't just go without it. And it's not that because the person I was seeking shelter of is gone, now I'm gone. We're not impersonalists, that if one soul goes, all souls go. So we pray for the recovery of any lost soul, but because a soul is lost doesn't mean another soul is lost. It could be. If one soul remained attached to a lost soul, but if you give up a bad connection and make a good connection, then you're saved. So these things, these unfortunate things, have made us more aware that we should take shelter in infallible places, in infallible persons. In Krishna, he's above the infallible. There's fallible, infallible, and Krishna is above the infallible. So take shelter in Krishna, take shelter in Srila Prabhupada, and be guided by somebody who is taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Nothing should be done. Nobody should force somebody to get reinitiated or to get it initiated or reinitiated by a particular person. Everything has to be done with free will. Things shouldn't be done by group consensus or peer pressure. Of course, some of these things are still being discussed in our movement, and with different shades of opinion and conclusion. But I'll try to answer as authoritatively as possible. Of course. Well, the Diksha and Shiksha are the same, says Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that means their responsibility is the same, to help the soul go back to Godhead. That's the responsibility in any case. So it's a dynamic thing. The relationship is dynamic. It depends on the sincerity and stature of the guru and the sincerity of the disciple, what their responsibility is to one another, isn't it? We can say what it is supposed to be ideally, but realistically, if you don't take your spiritual master as a very important part in your life, or if somebody tries to be a spiritual master but isn't fit, then they may not be able to make a successful contract for going back to Godhead. But the means are there where it can be done. So I think that an answer to your question that I would like to make is that you should take it in seriousness. You should take that this guru, his responsibility is to take me back to Godhead. That's why I've approached him as a guru, not for some other reason. Not because I didn't have a spiritual name, I wanted a spiritual name, or everybody said you have to get reinitiated or something like that. But I feel within myself that, from reading Prabhupada's books and understanding what the devotees are saying, that I should take shelter, and I feel that I should take shelter of this person. And why? Because in this way I'll be able to get out of this material world and develop pure love of Krishna, life after life. And this person will help me to do that. So it should be taken in all seriousness. If you don't feel the guru has that, can discharge that responsibility, then why approach a guru to only ask, as you say, to only now and then have something to do with him? It's not, so I don't think it's so much a distinction between Diksha and Shiksha. As essence of getting instruction from the guru, whatever kind of guru he may be, Diksha or Shiksha. And hearing with faith and applying the instructions and taking it in all seriousness. We hope we wish for everyone that they have that kind of relationship with the spiritual master, the best kind, rather than something that's really not very active, it was just a formality. There was a nice exchange with Prabhupada's friend Narayan Maharaj. One of my godbrothers was telling me, this was some years ago, he was going to take sannyas, and it was at a time when there was a kind of group pressure, and in his zone he was told, you're going to take sannyas, this is the person who should be your sannyas guru. So he thought, I don't really have such trust in that person to be sannyas guru. But anyway, sannyas guru is maybe not so important anyway. But he didn't know what to do, so he went, and his godbrother went and asked Narayan Maharaj in Vrindavan. He said, I don't really feel so much trust in this person, but they say that it shouldn't cause trouble. I should just take initiation from him. So I was thinking, maybe I should. Is it because is that sannyas guru? Is that just a formality? And Narayan Maharaj said, there is no formality in Vaishnavism. No formality. Meaning, nothing is just a formality. It has to come from real trust. So don't do anything only on that basis. Everything is supposed to have meaning. So something isn't right if you're moving along towards initiation and you're thinking like that. Well, I guess I ought to do it. It's just a formality anyway. Then why do it? You don't have to do it. There's no impelling reason why you should do it. If there's no impelling reason, then don't do it until it's impelling. You've heard the story how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was told by his father to get initiated, father's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and he asked, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, no, you're very advanced person, educated person, I'm illiterate, I can't accept you. So, we don't know the mind of the pure devotee. It was just Gaurakishore Das Babaji's humility. But there may have been that he wanted to see whether this person really feels it's absolutely necessary that I be his guru. Because he didn't want to be a guru anyway. But when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati impressed on him that you must be my guru or I'll give up my life, then Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, all right, I'll do it. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur kept sending his son to try to get initiated by him until it reached that point. So that's a lesson that it shouldn't be just a formality. My father sent me to get initiated from you, sir. So here I am. I'll be your disciple. All right, what should we do? It wasn't deep enough. He said, no, I won't accept you. You don't need a guru. So a foolish person, he might have been flattered and said, yes, I guess I don't need a guru. He told me I don't need a guru, I'm so intelligent. Yes, should. No, that's the next question. What if he's not? What if there are none around? What if there's no Uttama Adhikaris on the planet? Then should we wait? Well, one answer is the Uttama Adhikaris are on the planet in different forms. Srila Prabhupada is Uttama Adhikari, and he's on the planet. In different forms, books, instructions, movement, followers, murti. And included among Prabhupada's presence as followers and instructions is the fact that he trained up his disciples to become spiritual masters. And so even if they are not, they're expected to function as intermediate devotees, preachers, Madhyamadikaris. Therefore, if somebody, in other words, it is the one answer, that's a charged question that you ask. So one important answer is that, can one be a guru if he's not Uttamadhikari? Yes. But if that's so, then he should be very careful to give the disciple shelter of Uttama Adhikari and as Uttama Shloka, the Supreme Lord, also. Like I read, some of you weren't here, the statement of Kasyapa to his wife. She asked him for shelter. He said, I can't give you shelter, but Krishna can. And Prabhupada said he was not a foolish person to think that he was as good as God. And he said, Krishna is the guru. But Prabhupada says, by saying this, he became the guru, or he qualified himself as the guru. So the disciple has to see, this person, he's actually a guru because he is not bluffing, and he's connecting me to the Uttama Adhikari in the cyclic succession. It seems to me, or from the, that's the proper conclusion. You'd have to have full faith in that person to do that. But the other conclusion that would be that I won't take instruction from anyone. And another answer is that this comes to what I was speaking in the very beginning about the different viewpoints of the guru and the disciple. So the guru, he will not think of himself as Uttama Adhikari and be convinced that he's not. And the disciple, he has a certain duty to see his spiritual master in a different way. Like the spiritual master speaks of himself, like Krishnadas Kaviraj, that I'm very sinful, but we don't see him that way. So we have to approach it according to our faith, and of course according to Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. So there's no, you're not without connection to Uttama Adhikari. And if you think you don't need anyone to help you, connect to Uttama Adhikari. That may not be a fact. And Madhyam Vaishnavas, they can serve in that way, so long as it's clear. But too much of this designating, you know, well, what are you, is not the Vaishnava spirit. Seeking the so-called objective answer. Well, the guru, he may humbly not think he's Uttama Adhikari, and the disciple may think that he is Uttama Adhikari, but I want to know objectively, what is he? Well, there are symptoms, and they can be discussed, but who's in a position to make these judgments? Except the Uttama Adhikari. So we accept as axiomatic that Prabhupada is Uttama Adhikari, and he's very near to us. We said he's everyone's guru, instructing guru. So if we have full trust that somebody is representing Prabhupada, then he can be a spiritual master. We won't be without full guidance. That's what's stated in the Nectar of Instruction. But if you don't take shelter of Uttama Adhikari, you won't get sufficient guidance. So if you're guiding somebody, you just and some just like in the beginning, if you're speaking to someone, you just become a devotee, and you're helping someone to Krishna consciousness, they become very inclined to what you're saying. Please tell me more about Krishna. Then they ask you something you don't know. So you don't bluff, you say, I don't know that question, but some of the senior devotees in the temple know, here's Prabhupada's book that's in there. So you have to pass the person on to the higher authority. But many times you can answer many of their questions, you can actually guide them. So in the beginning that's called Vartma Pradaksha Guru, then there's also the Diksha and Shiksha Gurus. And even one is Diksha Shiksha, if he cannot give sufficient guidance, then just like the newcomer, he has to clearly tell, like Kasyapa did, I can't help you, but this is, I can help you to get the connection. And then if you say, well, if you can't give me full connection to Krishna as topmost devotee, then what are you doing instructing in the first place? Well, my spiritual master asked me to do this. So I'm giving that reply. Some may say, well, that's not good enough for me. And then they shouldn't take him as a guide. Not that he has to sell himself. No, you shouldn't take instruction from me. I'm definitely qualified. But someone else will say, well, that's good enough for me. That'll be very beneficial for me. And in this way, you have a very humble disciple who pleases Krishna by the humility. But if it doesn't sound convincing, then don't buy it. Because you're the one who has to be satisfied with it. But examine yourself why you're faithful or why you're not faithful. Which just points out that we do need some kind of help. Even if you don't call it guru, call it a devotee friend. When people would ask Prabhupada, how can I in ignorance choose a guru? He would emphasize then, he said, therefore you have to find out what is a guru. Just like if you want to buy gold, you have to find out what it is or you'll be cheated. If you want to select a school to go to, you should find out the qualifications of the schools. Therefore, you have to research on your own about these things in the books, and then you'll start to understand, and you'll see the symptoms in particular persons or lack of symptoms. You know all the symptoms for the Vaishnava, not supposed to get angry, not supposed to be agitated, this, that. Fixed in the absolute truth. You start to see, you start to know what a Vaishnava is and what are the symptoms. As far as judging another person to be your guide, and as far as being able to do self-examination, that you have to cultivate on your own. With friends are so valuable. Not just, there are different relationships. You have a relationship with senior devotee, which is guru-like, and then you have a relationship with friends, where you don't like go to the friend and do whatever they say, take it as absolute truth, but there's wonderful facility for exchange. You go to your friend and say, I'm trying, I think I should take a spiritual master and get initiated, but I can't understand what to do. A good serious friends will help you. And the best friend, Krishna, in the heart. It's like, Krishna, this is very bewildering to me. I'm supposed to have a spiritual master. I don't know if I should choose one. I don't know who I should choose. Please help me. Then Krishna will help you. By the grace of God, one gets a guru. So, we may think of that statement, by the grace of God, one gets a guru. We think of a person maybe who's out in the forest somewhere and there's no sadhu around, and then all of a sudden he meets a satguru. But in our case, there are many people who are saying, I'm a guru. But we're still trying, but who is my guru? Or who should I have trust in? But it's the same kind of thing. By the grace of God, out of all these persons who may be gurus, Krishna will help you to understand, if you're sincere, that this is a guru. We have to take that statement on faith, that by the grace of the Lord, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach, you'll find the guru. Many, many lifetimes you've wanted to go back to Godhead and you want spiritual guidance. So we found the guru if we have actually come and gotten connected to the Krishna Consciousness Movement, Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. All the gurus we need. But to get connected to them, we also need immediate guidance. And that's the system of parampara. And this is where our God brothers continue to discuss and debate. Some say, no, you don't need anybody, any contemporary person. All you need is Prabhupada. But then, where are we going to get that inspiration to do that, but by hearing from the people who are saying that? And then they become our guides. So we're not going to be able to banish the ongoing system of people coming and developing faith and getting instruction. So pray to Krishna that you be influenced in the right direction rather than influenced in the wrong direction, because influence is so important, or association. I received a letter from somebody. His address was in Russian. Well, if I knew you were here, maybe I'll see you later. I'll show you the envelope. But the name he wrote in English, Andrei Ivanov, some name. I wasn't going to ask whether you knew him. But so he wrote me. Mm-hmm. So this would be something. I don't have an immediate plan this year to go to Russia, but I know it's a wonderful opportunity for preachers and different God brothers are going. I hope to go someday. But so I would say that they could write me a letter and try to read some of the books. That would be a good start to answer that question.
How long to chant?
The different gurus say different things.
Oh. Before they get initiated, how long?
Or to be more difficult to get difficult. If you come, maybe you come once, and they maybe they want. Maybe they're chanting for a long time, so they say.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I would have to answer individuals that mm-hmm. But I can address some of the concerns. One thing is, if you need to be guided, then somebody who's coming there with some regularity to guide you would seem to be a better person to approach than somebody who's not going there. And if your concern is that you want to get initiated soon, and you think somebody's not coming enough, it'll take too long, according to my desires of when I want to get initiated, then again, you should take initiation from someone who gives you the facility to get initiated soon. It's practical. If you think, if those are overwhelming obstacles, which they well might be, that for some reason I'm a little attracted to this person, but he's not going to come here, and I don't know when I'll get initiated, therefore, this gives me too much of a problem, then why be attached to that person? But maybe that you'd have to, if you insisted, then you'd have to go find a way to be enlivened by a connection that didn't have those that normal expected exchange. There might be somebody who would prefer to operate like that, and it wouldn't be a sentimental thing. So everything is individual. But I always say, I mean, you're asking me personally, if somebody approaches me from some faraway place that I don't intend to go, I right away say, why are you asking me? Why not approach somebody who's there? I think that's a good place for me to start exchanging with them.
But you're not supposed to come to
Russia. I'm not supposed to come?
Oh, for me.
I think I am supposed to, but I don't know if I will.
I think the Russian devotees prefer you to come.
Sure. Oh, I'm not exactly sure how you're using those words, prefer and supposed to. If they want a spiritual master, they would prefer that I come. Then not come. Anyway, I would like to go, and I guess it's just a matter of planning a trip there.
What period of time, if it's possible to say?
Well, yeah, I'm going to India again. Not in 1990, at the beginning of January 1991, I'm going to India, and after that, then I'm going to stay over there in different places. Maybe I was going to go to Australia, or that would be a time. That would be the first time that I might go. Not before that, January or February 1991. One another thing is, I was going to go to Poland, and Kirti Raj Prabhu was, I was exchanging with him letters, and then he wrote me at one point. He said, "Oh, and one thing is, no writing about what you see there. It's very, you know, people can get into trouble." So I said, "How can I go somewhere and not write?" So I would have to renounce an important attachment. I would like to go to Russia and write about what I saw, but. For that reason, I didn't go to Poland, because that's my dharma, to go somewhere and to where I am, or at least write what's going on and tell other people what it's like there.
Nothing's changed. You can write.
You can?
Yes. Even
that's not what the GBC says.
he's not coming to Russia.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what is there. But now it's very strange, really. No, it's more open than here.
Huh.
Even if you watch TV, it's so open now.
Yeah.
The country is very open. There's so many difficulties. And we can arrange, for instance, if you come, we can arrange you speak by TV.
Huh.
And millions of people.
Can you come without going as on a tour guide, as a tourist, and having to live with non-devotees for a week, like that? Not.
They say that afterwards you will see the temple, then any guru can come to that place. And this time, we can't go to the temple, so only just to go on a tour.
Mm-hmm.
But then all gurus come, and then they come to the place and change the guru.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can talk with my secretary as to when I could go. I saw photos from Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj of his visit there in the summer. It was really wonderful, and so many different places that he went, not just the cities but Kiev and all these places.
Was waiting. Oh. It
was very Thank you. We should end this 9:20 already. Marathon and everything. Okay. If anyone wants further questions, we can write back and forth. Thank you. Thank you.